Good morning, this is Linda, and I'm reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. We're going to begin with an article out of Decatur called City Moving on Overpass, and it is submitted by Tom Lisi. Out of Decatur, freight trains are blocking traffic for 18 hours every week, and over the course of 5 years, police responded to 52 crashes at the intersection of Brush College Road and Ferries Parkway. Any commuter who sits bumper to bumper there every day knows why the city of Decatur has put a new overpass at the top of the list of projects it is trying to win federal grant money for. But local governments like Decatur, looking for federal help on major infrastructure improvements, are adrift, waiting for either President Donald Trump's administration to follow through on its promises of a major infrastructure plan or Congress to take matters into its own hands. The Decatur City Council took a step forward Monday when it voted to spend $2 million to buy some of the land needed for an overpass that would carry Brush College over Ferries Parkway, the intersection where city traffic studies have revealed the long train wait times and traffic crashes. The money comes from a state grant awarded in 2010 through the Illinois Jobs Now program. We do not have enough cash to buy all of the properties, said Public Works Director Rick Marley, but appraisals and negotiations will get underway with some of the businesses and property owners in the area. City leaders have been working for more than 5 years on the Brush College Road Improvement Project, which Marley said has four components: the overpass at Ferries Parkway, an overpass just a few blocks south to take vehicles over a Norfolk Southern-owned rail yard, a state project to widen the intersection with East William Street Road, and a plan to expand Brush College Road from 2 lanes to 4 lanes. The cost for all that work could exceed $80 million, with the Ferries Parkway overpass alone estimated at $40 million, Marley said. The Brush College project is separate from the Macon County Beltway, a long-discussed effort to build a loop around the city's east side. Although the Beltway would connect to Brush College Road at its intersection with Illinois 48, both major transportation projects are considered key to the city's economic development efforts and were the subject of a trip to Washington, D.C. in June, where city, Macon County, and labor leaders lobbied for federal funds. With U.S. lawmakers now in summer recess, it is uncertain whether any decisions about a federal transportation grant program will be made before next year. The TIGER, and that is all capital letters, T-I-G-E-R, grant program, under which Decatur sought $20 million under President Barack Obama, was discontinued under Trump's administration. In the meantime, all city officials can do is carry on and try to build their case for major federal money for the first item of a larger vision of Decatur as a regional trade powerhouse. They decided to move forward with the land acquisition after Federal Highway Administration officials critiqued Decatur's federal grant application. One of their comments was, quote, "You're not far enough along," end quote, Marley said. Marley said the city can still go forward with any grant applications while land negotiations commence. But as far as when that next application process might happen, I don't think the folks in Washington even know, Marley said. While the Brush College corridor has long been targeted for improvements, Marley said it was only in the last few years that officials decided to prioritize the persistent traffic problems at the Ferries Parkway intersection. The years of talk, plans, and studies have some nearby residents and businesses confused about what's going to happen at Brush College Road and when. Deborah Benton's home would be demolished if and when the city finds funding to widen a large section of Brush College from 2 lanes to 4. Benton, a retired florist who has lived on Brush College Road for more than 30 years, said the last time the city had a meeting for area residents was in 2014, and it sounded like it was going, you know? Benton said she now does not want to repair a 25-year-old leaking roof and a garage in need of structural work. Quote, I could put the money I'd have to spend on that and maybe use that for a lawyer when things get going, end quote, she said. Quote, I'm 61 years old. 10 years from now, I'll be 71 years old, and it's going to be hard moving out at that point, end quote, Benton said. Marley said the city has been in talks with the Illinois Department of Transportation about making improvements to East William Street Road, which is a state highway, while efforts to secure grant money for the overpass project continue. But Marley said the stretch of road in between where Benton's home is located is local, not state-owned. IDOT spokesman Guy Sturgill said the East William Street project is not on their 6-year repair list. We will work with the city going forward as we have up to this point to coordinate on timing, he said. Tammy Heiser, owner of the new Back Door and Poor House, is one of the businesses part of the city's land acquisition agreement for the Ferry's Party Parkway intersection. Heiser, who does not own the property at 3925 East Ferry's Parkway, said that she has not yet heard anything about the city's plans and whether she will be able to relocate her business. Quote, actually, I heard the plan is called off right now, end quote, she said. And that does complete that reading on that article. Our next article out of Decatur is titled Early Returns Positive, Better Sales, Fewer Troubles at Celebration, and is submitted by Justin Kahn. Terry Chance kept seeing the comments on Facebook and began to worry. Were the fence and admission fee going to affect business at her Mr. Softy ice cream truck during the Decatur celebration? It turned out that answer was a resounding yes. It did affect business. It was way better, said Chance, who has been bringing her Mr. Softy truck to the celebration for 3 years. Quote, we were pleasantly surprised, end quote. Celebration producer Lori Sturgill said she would not have attendance numbers for last week's 3-day festival for a week or so, but she said she liked what she saw. I was not sure what to expect as far as community support, but in the back of my mind, I was putting those detracting into the category of the vocal minority, Sturgill said. I knew there was an army of people in Decatur and Central Illinois who love this festival. I'm glad to see I was not disappointed. It has that vocal minority that had chance. It was that vocal minority that had Chance worried. I was reading a lot of posts on social media, and we had had the discussion on whether or not numbers would be down because of the entry fee, Chance said. We even did some radio spots beforehand. But overall, we were happy with the results. It was a really wonderful celebration. Chance's radio commercials were in collaboration with fellow Decatur vendor Matt Hausberger, who runs Pig Out Concessions. Both agreed the biggest improvement for vendors this year was not having to police wristbands. Since 2010, wristbands are not required for entrance, but were needed to purchase food and drinks. That was a big relief, Harsberger said. The first year we were down there, our girl at the window sold a taco salad, and immediately there was someone from the celebration at the window telling us that they didn't have a wristband, and if we did it again, there would be problems. It was just a lot to do as a vendor to make sure that everyone had the proper wristband. Sturgill said the main feedback she heard from vendors was that keeping outside food and drink out of the celebration helped sales. We had vendors telling us that they had had record years. The mini donuts guy used those exact words, Sturgill said. What we heard from vendors was that the people here were ready to buy food and beverages because they were not here eating their own food and drinking their own drinks. Though Sturgill said an entrance would likely be added at the intersection of Merchant and Prairie Streets next year, she was happy with how the fencing worked in its celebration debut. There was a learning curve there. There are areas we are going to have to change around for next year, Sturgill said. But overall, it went up smoothly, and the teams at the admission gates handled everything well. Representatives from the Decatur Police Department, which was on hand for security in and around the celebration, did not respond to messages seeking comment on Monday. The Decatur Fire Department reported just one call to the celebration, a gas leak on Sunday after a woman trying to park her car rammed a gas meter. Fire crews monitored the area until Ameren, Illinois crews arrived. The Macon County Sheriff's Department was in charge of security at the carnival entrance, where bags were checked and a metal detector wand was passed over entrance. We had no issues at all, Sergeant Jim Herman said. People were actually receptive to it. It is something that will probably be considered again in the future. Dell's Popcorn Shop, 142 North Merchant Street, was one of the downtown businesses that stayed open during the celebration, offering cheap sodas and a sale on caramel apples. Owner Kemper Wilcutt II said he is pleased with the results of the fence. It classed up the whole event and brought the right crowd of people down there, Wilcutt said. The celebration is a business that needs to generate revenue. If you want NAMAX and to have a successful event like they had this weekend, it cannot be free. Wilcutt said a change in setup with the wine and beer garden moving to a new location helped Dale's sales. With the beer garden, you would have the same crowd there all three nights, Wilcutt said. This year, there was a stage there, and the crowd rotated quite a bit, which made it a busier year for us. Harrisburger, in his third year with a stand at the celebration, also saw an increase in sales. But it was a hot new item, not location, that boosted his enterprise. Those taco fries, they were hard to keep up with, Harrisburger said. They got good reviews from the media, and I heard they blew up on social media. We had to buy a second freezer on Saturday because we did not have the capacity to hold what we needed to get through the day. And that completes that article on the celebration. Next, we have an article out of Springfield. It is titled, Beeman Appealed is Denied, Supreme Court Next Stop for Case Against Normal Officers, and is written by Edith Brady Lunny, L-U-N-N-Y. Lawyers for Alan Beeman will ask the Illinois Supreme Court to review an appellate court ruling in favor of the town in Normal and three former police officers accused of conspiring to frame Beeman on murder charges that were later dismissed against him. Alan Beeman suffered a terrible injustice. He spent his youth in prison for a crime he manifestly did not commit. We plan to ask the Illinois Supreme Court to review the decision, David Shapiro, one of Beeman's lawyers, said on Monday. Thomas DeCiani, one of the lawyers for the town and its former officers, said, quote, on behalf of the officers sued in this case, we are very pleased that the appellate court agreed with our position. We hope this is the end of the litigation for all involved, end quote. Beeman was exonerated in 2008 of murder charges in connection with the strangling death of his former girlfriend, Illinois State University student Jennifer Lockmiller of Decatur. Lockmiller was found dead in her apartment near the university in August of 1993. Beeman was convicted 2 years later and served about 13 years of a 50-year sentence before the Illinois Supreme Court reversed the conviction based on what the court found to be tenuous evidence against the Illinois Wesleyan University graduate. Beeman, now married with two children and living in Rockford, also was given a certificate of innocence and pardoned by former Governor Pat Quinn. So far, efforts by Beeman's Chicago legal team to bring Beeman's accusations of malicious prosecution to court have been unsuccessful at both federal and state court levels. Several civil lawsuits filed since his release have been rejected in rulings that favor the town and the three former officers. McLean County and former prosecutors James Suk and Charles Raynard, who both went on to serve as judges, were dropped from federal lawsuits filed by Beeman. Friday's ruling by the 4th District Appellate Court leaves in place a ruling by 6th Judicial Circuit Judge Richard Brock Jr. to dismiss the lawsuit against Normal and now retired officers Tim Friesmeier, Dave Warner, and Frank Zayas. Beeman alleged the officers failed to adequately consider evidence against another potential suspect, instead focusing all their attention on Beeman. The appellate court found no evidence that the three investigating officers pressured or tried to influence Suk and Raynard's decision to prosecute Beeman. The court also rejected the most serious allegation made by Beeman's lawyers against Friesmeier, including that he lied to a grand jury and provided prosecutors with false information from two time trials he performed in to show how long it may have taken Beeman to travel from Rockford to Lockmiller's apartment. As to Warner, the court concurred that Beeman's claims were insufficient to support an accusation that the former officer deliberately withheld inconclusive polygraph results from a second suspect. And that does conclude that article. Our next article is going to be titled, "Protesters Target Decatur Logging Contract," is submitted by Tom Lisi. City council members were greeted at the Decatur Civic Center Monday by 36 protesters critical of a logging contract they approved in May. "I have never organized protest before," said Melody Arnold, president of the Decatur Audubon Society. "It was not necessarily difficult. There are a lot of people who don't necessarily think that logging is a good thing," Arnold said. The contract allows Sullivan-based Critchlow Logging to cut down 114 trees and sell the wood, guaranteeing the city at least $25,000 of the proceeds. City officials have said the money would be used for beautification efforts. The white oak, red oak, walnut, and locust trees sit on 18 acres of wooded land that the city owns south of Sportsman Park. The agreement came about after the logging company approached the city, officials have said. The council approved the deal May 15th. Two members voted against it: David Horn, who raised environmental concerns, and Bill Faber, who said the city had not made a strong case to allow the logging. The Audubon Society and the McLean County Community Environmental Council opposes the logging for environmental reasons. But she said they would be pleased if the city moved to create a forest management plan. "We would rather see them not cut the trees, but yes, we would consider that a win," Arnold said. Judy Parrish, chair of the Community Environmental Council, has also criticized the lack of bidding process and competition. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and Councilman Pat McDaniel both voted for the logging contract and said they were glad to see citizens being active, but they were not rethinking the contract. "There was an opportunity to revisit the contract. There was not support to do that, and we are going to move forward," Moore Wolf said. Moore Wolf added the council may consider the idea of a forest management plan when officials meet in the fall to discuss priorities. City Manager Tim Gleason has said that he expects the logging work to get underway in the fall. That concludes that article. Our next article is going to be titled, "Police Scared Girl Texts for Help," and is submitted by Tony Reed and is written out of Macon. A 14-year-old girl on a sleepover texted her mother to come get her immediately after a 22-year-old man touched her inappropriately, police said. An affidavit signed by a Macon County Sheriff's deputy said Joshua T.R. Whitaker, put his hands down the victim's shorts twice as she slept in the living room of a house in Macon on June 16th. Quote, "Mommy, come and get me, please. I'm begging you, please, Mommy, please, please," end quote, the girl had texted to her mother, the affidavit said. Whitaker has been charged with battery, making physical contact, and his case had been set for a pretrial hearing Monday in Macon County Circuit's Court. State's Attorney Jay Scott said Whitaker has denied the charge, and at Whitaker's request, the case was continued, and a pretrial hearing is now set for September 1st. Whitaker is free on $15,000 bond and is represented by Attorney Andrew Weatherford. Whitaker also is facing a pretrial hearing on the same date for another case dating to October 2016, in which he is charged with the sexual exploitation of a child, which he also denies, Scott said. A pretrial hearing for that case had originally been set for June 19th, just a few days after the latest offense reportedly occurred. The affidavit dealing with the battery making physical contact said Whitaker had crawled across the living room floor to reach the girl who sent the text. When it happened again, the affidavit said she woke up the mother of her friend who was sleeping nearby. She, parentheses the mother, end parentheses, woke up to the victim pushing her side. When she woke up, the victim said, "He is touching me," the affidavit said. The affidavit said Whitaker was found hiding under a recliner chair and told everyone he had been sleeping before running out of the room. End of that article. We're going to read a little bit from the local area here. Briefs from Decatur. Amron phone scam. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott and the Macon County Sheriff's Office are warning local businesses to beware of a phone scam circulating in the area. Several businesses have received phone calls from people claiming to be Amron, Illinois employees, Scott said in a news release on Monday. The caller told the businesses that their power bill had not been paid and threatened to discontinue their power if immediate payment is not made. Scott said many of these calls were made to automotive businesses and were reported Monday morning to the Elder Fraud Hotline. Anyone who receives one of these calls should hang up, the release said, and call the Elder Fraud Hotline at 217-615-7582. All calls are answered by Scott or Macon County Sheriff Thomas Schneider. Also out of Decatur, a carrier terminated. The Herald and Review has ended its contract with a newspaper carrier shown on video removing a package from a subscriber's porch. The video, which appeared on social media over the weekend, was recorded by a security camera. The homeowner contacted the Herald and Review on Friday. The contract with the carrier was terminated immediately after the footage was reviewed and the person's identity was confirmed, said publisher Julie Bechtel. They will no longer contract for us. This kind of action is totally unacceptable and will not be tolerated, she said. Also in Decatur, we have extensive fire damage. A Decatur house fire left an estimated damage bill of $88,000, the Decatur Fire Department said. Battalion Chief Todd McKenzie said the house at 971 North Linden Avenue suffered extensive damage Saturday morning to the first and second floors from a combination of heavy fire, smoke, and water. McKenzie said the homeowner was out at the time of the fire and the cause of the blaze remained under investigation. Next is Decatur, caught in the act. Burglar, police said, was caught in the act of stealing from a Decatur home, is now facing multiple charges. The 39-year-old man was arrested August 4th after patrol officers chased him from the backyard of a house in the 2200 block of East Main Street, the affidavit said. Police said the man broke into the house and was getting ready to remove two televisions, the remotes for which were in his pockets. A search of his van with a police dog also found 1.5 grams of cocaine in five small bags packaged for resale, the affidavit said. The man was jailed on preliminary charges of burglary, possession of burglary tools, resisting police, and manufactured delivery of a controlled substance. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. The man remained in the Macon County Jail in lieu of posting a $150,000 bond. Out of Mattoon, crash victim dies. A driver who was injured in a crash while fleeing Mattoon police officers has died. The obituary for Blake A. Boland, 20, of Mattoon, reported that he had died at 3:45 a.m. Sunday at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Boland was airlifted to Carle on July 26th after his pickup truck was in a head-on collision with a railway truck on U.S. 45 near County Road 1000 North during the early afternoon of July 26th. The occupants of the railway truck were not injured. According to the Mattoon Police Department, Boland was fleeing police officers at the time of the crash. The department has reported that Boland had been wanted on a Coles County arrest warrant for failure to appear on a charge of methamphetamine possession. Illinois State Police personnel were called in to handle the crash investigation due to Mattoon officers being involved in the pursuit. Mattoon Police Chief Jeff Branson said he has not received a crash report yet from the state police. Next, out of Taylorville, there is a seed event on Thursday. A program promoting gardening with heritage and heirloom seeds will be from 10 a.m. to noon Thursday, August 10th at the Christian County U of I Extension Office Auditorium, 1120 North Webster Street in Taylorville. The free event will highlight the treasures of heirloom gardening, the benefits of volunteering at historical homes, and advice on collecting and storing seed. To register, call 217-525-2781 or 217-287-7246, although walk-ins are welcome. This week on the Herald Review calendar, today, having a baby series, 6:30 p.m. at HSHS St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital Auditorium in Effingham, the first of three-part program for first-time mothers and their support partners. On Wednesday, Coffee with Judy, 9 a.m., Decatur Macon County Senior Center. Meet with Outreach Coordinator Judy Pfeiffer. And on Thursday, Curious George, The Golden Meatball, a Theater for Young Audiences performance at 10:30 a.m. at Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. Workshop targets laid off ADM workers. Allison Petty out of Decatur, while it's still unknown how many people lost their jobs at Archer Daniels Midland Company last month, one local agency is mobilizing to help. Workforce Investment Solutions of Macon and DeWitt counties held two rapid response workshops Monday for ADM employees affected by recent layoffs. 11 people showed up between the two events, said Executive Director Rocky Wilkerson. Two more workshops are planned this month. The next two events are scheduled for 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. Tuesday, August 15th at 757 West Pershing Road. Registration is not required, and for more information, call Karen Allen, Program Manager at 217-875-8281. Okay, this is Linda, and I'm going to be taking a short break here after reading part one of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. I hope you will return to listen to us read part two.